Hey, good morning, New City Church. It is so good to be with you all this morning. Kind of in person this morning. My name is Josh, and I'm a pastor at a new church out in Portland, Oregon that is called Makers. And I was supposed to be with you all this morning there in person, and unfortunately, after dodging it for 2 years, COVID finally hit me this week. I was supposed to be with you all, and I was so excited to share the stories and the beauty and the radical belonging that we're creating out here in Portland with you all this morning there in LA. And Portland did me dirty and got me COVID this week after 2 years of dodging it, right? And so I've had all the symptoms, and when I say I've had all the symptoms, I mean I've had all the symptoms. If you had COVID, especially this new strain that's out there, you know what I'm talking about. And so after talking to Pastor Kevin and Pastor Danny, we all just decided that it'd be best, of course, to keep our community safe, that I would need to quarantine, but we still wanted to be able to share a little bit about our church with you all. And so here we are, back in what feels like 2020, watching some guy give a sermon on a screen, right? And so I am fully medicated up, and I'm ready to go, and I am so excited to share a little bit about what we're doing out here in Portland with you all. But before we talk about Portland and Makers, I actually want to talk about you and your community there at New City Church. Pastor Kevin was one of my church planting coaches, what felt like an older brother to me during our church launch. We launched last October. So we just kind of went over the 6 month threshold. So when I say we're like new, we're like just coming out of the fetus stage of of church planting. And Pastor Kevin was such a pivotal role in my life during that launch. There was one particular moment, and this was literally less than a week away from our church launch. And we are a fully inclusive and fully affirming church. We have both women and queer people and people of color in leadership, and we are trying our best to decolonize our leadership so not everything comes through the mouth of a cis white man, me, right? And Pastor Kevin, in your community there in LA, are such role models of what that looks like. And there was one particular moment where we were talking to two different funding networks, because if you know anything about church planting, or if you know anything about life, it takes a whole lot of money, right? And we were fully independent. There was just 15 of us scrappy people trying to put some funds together to actually make this thing happen. And we were talking to two people who would really make this thing actually be able to be self-sustainable. And on one particular day, one of those funding partners told us no, because they couldn't partner with someone who was going to be a fully inclusive and fully affirming church. And then the other one told us no, not 20 minutes later. And their reasoning was that there was me, a cis white man at the top, and they weren't sure if they could really trust a cis white man to bring radical, you know, belonging and inclusion and equity to different people groups, because I would have so many, as I do, so many just blind spots up. And so here I was in the middle trying to figure out, like, how in the world are we going to make this happen when one side can't trust us, the other side, I guess, can't partner with us because of our inclusion. And I just felt like I was in the middle of the wilderness. And so I texted Pastor Kevin. I was like, do you have a second to talk? I need to talk through things. And so he jumped onto a Zoom call with me. And from what I recall, I just started bawling like a baby. And I just said, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I feel like I can't come up with a solution. We can't find the right partners in the networks. And I know what we're doing is so new and different, but I feel like no one can trust us. And that sense of trust for me is huge. And I was just bawling, like pouring tears out to Kevin. And, you know, I came into that Zoom call looking for a solution. And I think what Pastor Kevin actually saw was I wasn't really looking for a solution. I was just looking for solidarity. And he sat there on that Zoom call with me and wept with me. And I could deeply feel that he was feeling what I was feeling. And I think that day I left knowing that no matter what happens with us out here in Portland, we have a older brother church out there in LA. And so while I can't be with you this morning, I just want to deeply let you all know how grateful I am for you all. And yes, your financial generosity for us, but more than that, the example you set for what church can actually be. And I think it's a beautiful thing. And we are just pursuing or trying to pursue what you're doing out there in LA. And same with Pastor Kevin. Whether you're an OG New City Church person, or maybe you're brand new and you have no clue why there's this guy talking on a screen this morning, just remind yourself today how amazing of a pastor and a team with both Pastor Danny and the rest of the crew there that New City Church has. You have something that is unique and beautiful and rare, and I don't want you to ever forget that. And so anyways, I am excited to share a little bit about Makers out here in Portland, Oregon. We call ourselves a community of beauty and belonging for our city and the world. Now, those two words, beauty and belonging, those seem to be continual like words that pop up to describe why we exist. We tell ourselves we don't really have a vision statement. We have more of a identity statement. And our identity as a community is to be a community of both beauty and belonging, not just for our city, but for the world as a whole. Like I said earlier, we have an amazing honor and opportunity to have queer people and people of color in leadership and on staff with us on our board, to have women who speak during our gatherings as well. And it's such a beautiful thing to see. We sit in the intersection of both orthodoxy and curiosity, which for us, that means that we are deeply rooted in this message from the Bible, in this man named Jesus, and not only what Jesus said, but the things that Jesus did. And so that for us is deep-rooted orthodoxy, but we have curiosity as well. And we're asking ourselves the question, how does that play out in modern America in 2022, after coming out of political unrest and more gun violence? Our earth is slowly changing, and people are asking questions about this, what seems to be antiquated religion called Christianity. And so we meet people there with their curiosity, and we give them a little bit of orthodoxy with that. And we create, I get this spiritual cocktail to ask people, what does it look like to follow Jesus in 2022? So because of that, our church is predominantly what they would call post-Christian. And when I say that they're post-Christian, I think what they're actually saying is that they are post-American Christianity. And they're trying to figure out, where does this Middle Eastern belief system belong in my life here and now in 2022? It's one of the most beautiful things to see and to be able to be a part of. And so today what I want to do is talk a little bit about those two words with you all, beauty and belonging. There's one particular story that comes to mind when I think of the word beauty. Now, the story happens about 1,000 years ago, and the story is centered around this man named Prince Vladimir. Now, 1,000 years ago, Prince Vladimir, he was a pagan monarch of Russia. And Prince Vladimir, he was in search of a religion. Prince Vladimir was trying to unite every single tribe in Russia into like one particular like single group of people, right? And Prince Vladimir knew the best way to unite people. And the best way to unite people sometimes, especially cities and communities, is through a common belief system. And so Prince Vladimir began to investigate all of his options. Now, towards the end of his search, he sent out some of his most trusted advisors and leaders to literally like adventure around the world and see what else is out there, what other religions are out there in the world. And after they had searched far and wide for every religion known to man, they came back to Russia to report to Prince Vladimir what they had experienced. Some found religions that were like very regimented and ritualistic, Some found religions that were like mystical and very esoteric. Some found religions that wouldn't allow you to consume sugar, and so those were ruled out immediately. Can I get an amen on that? And then there was a small group of advisors who traveled to a cathedral in Constantinople. Now, this cathedral in Constantinople, it's called the Temple of Holy Wisdom, or you may know it as Hagia Sophia. Now, Prince Vladimir, he asked these advisors who went to Hagia Sophia what religion that they had encountered. And they said that they had encountered Christianity. And he asked them to tell him more about this religion. This is what they said about Christianity. They said, when these Christians brought us into their place of worship, into this temple, we no longer knew if we were on earth or in heaven. They said that they were overwhelmed by the beauty in both the place of worship, the temple, and the words of worship. They even went on to say that they weren't even sure what some of them were talking about. But they said this, that they could never forget such beauty in their religion. I mean, isn't that crazy? Like, think about that. I love when they say that they weren't sure what the Christians were talking about. And I think we've all probably been there at one point or another. But they said that they could never forget the beauty that was in their religion. And Prince Vladimir responded, and he said, I'll take the beautiful one. I'll take the beautiful religion. Now, put yourself in the shoes of these advisors real quick, right? Put yourself in the shoes of these other advisors who were sent out to help Prince Vladimir find a religion. They would essentially start asking Prince Vladimir questions about his decision, right? Because again, to them, there's no substance there. There's no depth there. There's just beauty in this other religion. So when they started asking Prince Vladimir, why did you choose the beautiful religion? This is what he said. He said, because beauty can change the world. Beauty can change the world. Now, this is not a pitch or a vision statement for Christianity. This is a vision pitch for beauty. Because time and time again, we see that beauty is a universal language that can move this world forward. Now, that actually makes me ask the question, how then is beauty created? I would argue that beauty is created from our hands. And then you might take it one step further. I'm a bit of an Enneagram 5, so I got to find the thing under the thing under the thing. So if beauty comes from our hands, then where does what we create from our hands come from? I would actually say that that comes from a deep place of a knowing. That beauty that can happen out of our hands, it's something more intuitive rather than intellectual, right? It's more of a feeling, right, that grabs you. Like, rather than a fact that just kind of like sits on the surface level. Now, I would also argue that beauty is a universal language that moves the world forward. It's one of the few areas in our world where people can share an experience, even if they see the world in radically different ways. COVID. Art also, and beauty also, it encourages us to cherish intuition. Beauty encourages us to embrace uncertainty, right? And it takes us to a place of ideation to search constantly for new ways to express our humanity. Beauty, I guess in another way of saying it, comes in all shapes and sizes, right? And as people who can create this beauty, I think it's our honor to almost break the rules of humanity and find new and unorthodox ways of approaching all the issues that are in the world. Now, I know that probably felt like a lot of words. I'll say it like this. We are here to make beauty that is good. We're also here to make beauty that does good. Now today, I just want to look at one verse when we talk about beauty. I want to go back and look at Genesis 1, the creation poem. And I want us to look at the creation poem this morning with fresh eyes. I would love for us to look at this today as if we've never seen it before. Because I think looking at it from a fresh perspective may actually allow us to see things that we have never seen before. So, Genesis 1:1. You probably know, but this is how it goes. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's it. That's how the whole thing starts. Now, if you were to take out where God creates, which is in the beginning, and if you were to take out what this God creates, which is the heavens and the earth, you're left with two words, right? You're left with God created or God creates. Now, in the Hebrew imagination, this is the translation of Elohim bara. Elohim bara. Now, Elohim is a title for bara. It's actually a title for multiple gods. And I'll let Pastor Kevin take care of that one later. But what I want to focus on today is this word bara. Because this word bara, the Hebrew word for create, it means to make something out of nothing. But it doesn't stop there. It means to make something out of nothing for a very distinct and unique purpose. And so that's how the whole creation poem begins. And it goes on to create more and more beautiful things. In verse number 3, it was light. And God saw the light that was made. And he called this creation good. Then verse 10, it's the sky. And the sky is good. And 12, it's the land. The land is good. And 18, it's the moon. Verse 21, it's the birds and the fish. And then it's the animals. And at the very end of this creation poem, we show up. You show up. Humanity shows up. It reaches its climax there in verse 31. And the creation poem, it says something like this. It says that God created mankind in God's image. It says in the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. And then it ends with God looking at all of creation, both humanity and the universe, all people and all things. And it says that God saw what was made, and it was very good. Hold on to that. Very good. So this creation poem, what do you have going on in this, right? We're going to look at this with fresh eyes this morning. What you have is a whole lot of things being made out of nothing, right? A whole lot of things being made out of nothing into something. And then humanity shows up on the scene. You get to Genesis 1:31, and what does it say? It says that humanity is made, and to be human is to bear the image of God. Like literally, to be you is to look a little bit like God. And if you were to ask yourself the question, if you don't know anything about God, if you don't know anything about creation, this is what you have to go off of. That God made things, and God said it was good, and God made you, and he said it was good. If you get to this point, you may ask yourself, if I look a little bit like God, at this point, what do we know about God? Well, at this point, all we know is that God takes raw materials and he makes something beautiful out of it. He takes nothing and he turns it into a bara. He creates it into something for a very distinct, very unique purpose, right? He makes something beautiful. And if this story says that we all look a little bit like God, that we all bear the image of God, if we are all here to do the same things that God does in this world, then I think you could say this, that we are here to create beautiful things with what is right in front of us. that we are here to create beautiful things with what is right in front of us. That we're here to take the raw materials that are right in front of us and to make more and more and more beautiful things. We are here to make more beauty in the chaos of this world. We are here to make more inclusion and equity at our tables. We are here to take good and to make it very good, or just as God did. We're here to make more light in the dark. So you might ask yourself the question then, what is the raw material that God gives me to create? What is the beauty that is right in front of us? I would argue that the first thing that you have to create with is your life. Literally your human experience, that you get to shape it. You have the privilege to form it, to steer it, to actually make beautiful things in this world with your life. Madeline Engel, she said it like this, that you are an artist at work and your life is a work of art. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the elephant in the room here, because whenever you say something like your life is a work of art, whenever someone talks about something that kind of sounds a little bit artsy, I think we automatically default to all the artsy people in the room, right? However, I would argue that you are constantly creating your life, that you are constantly shaping and forming things in your life, that you are creating something out of nothing all the time, that you are creating more bara, and that you makes you, my dear brothers and sisters in LA, that makes you artists at work. Let me give you an example. What is a child? A child is literally raw material coming together to make something brand new, right? What about you who are teachers in the room? Some of you literally have to take, you have to take a boring and mundane concept like math, and you have to come up with an expressive, creative way to teach a very complex thing to an underdeveloped 5-year-old brain, right? Or for some of us, a underdeveloped 34-year-old brain. Some of you in the room, you work on a computer all day, and what you're doing is you're changing and manipulating spreadsheets. I think of our operations director, Amy, who is a nerd about two things, spirituality and spreadsheets. And when she tells me about the new spreadsheet she just made, you can tell that that's where her passion lies. Like, her eyes light up when she shows me the next best spreadsheet she just made for makers, right? Now, for some of us, we spend our day sitting down, having coffee with people who are healing from trauma, from some essence of abuse in their life. And when they say, what do I do now? Just as Pastor Kevin did for me, sometimes it's not a solution, but sometimes it's just a hug. Sometimes it's asking them more questions. And sometimes it's you gathering all the raw material for that conversation and saying, how do we have a better life with all of this? And you know what happens whenever you see people talking about the thing they're creating in the world? Their eyes light up, right? Like, when they know they're making something out of nothing to create more beauty in this world. Like, whenever they say, when I'm making this thing, I just feel so alive. That's because there's a difference between just living your life and being fully alive, right? See, it's not just the writers and the speakers and the musicians or the painters. How we create beauty in the world, that's in all of our hands. See, the kind of life that you live, what you do with your spare time, how you spend your energy, it's all a part of how you create beauty in this world. That with every single step in your life, that you are creating something brand new, something that is your act of bara. And my dear brothers and sisters, that act of bara will be the most beautiful thing that you can offer to this world. See, I think another way that you can say it is this, that we are all artists at work because all of us, we're all taking part in the ongoing flourishing of creation. We are all still a part of that Genesis 1 poem. There is sometimes nothing in our hands, but the beauty of being human is to take nothing and to turn it into beauty in this world, to make something that not only is good, but something that does good in this world. If I'm saying anything, I'm saying this, that God made you an artist at work, and your life, my friend, it is a work of art. You know, I think all of this for me, it points to one question, not just for our community here in, called Makers in Portland, but all of this points to one massive question. And that question is, what beauty will you create that will change the world? What beauty will you create that will change the world? Pastor Danny asked me to take this message and kind of split it up in two different parts, beauty, and then we're going to talk about belonging. But what we're going to do now is something a little bit different, kind of get our eyes off of the screen for a second. And I believe we're all going to break out in some sections. I'm sure Pastor Danny will come up and say something about this. But we're going to kind of break up and we're going to talk about that one question. The question is this, what beauty will you create that will change the world? All right, I hope your breakout session there was fun and maybe even challenging on what beauty that you will create for this world. And so that's part of our community here in Portland called Makers. We're a community of beauty, but we're also a community of belonging. Now I'm going to take this conversation for the last few minutes here and completely capitulate it towards a different way. I want to go from the creation poem in the Old Testament all the way to this man named Peter, who's a follower, a disciple of Jesus in the New Testament. Like, as we know, Jesus, a first century Jewish rabbi, had these people named disciples, these apostles who would follow him. And what Peter did was he began to live his life as a disciple of Jesus. And he began to do the things that Jesus did. And there's one particular movement in the story of Peter that I think is going to help us understand how to create a community of both beauty and belonging. There's a time when Peter finds himself in Rome, and what he's doing is he's doing the things that Jesus did in this world, which, let me remind you, a lot of times the things that Jesus did were very subversive. They were very political. They were culturally disruptive. And even to the disciples of Rabbi Jesus, sometimes it didn't make sense. And there's one particular moment where Peter finds himself in Rome. And there's this movement where this man named Cornelius, and Cornelius, who isn't a Jew, he gets called into the way of Jesus by Jesus himself, right? Now, at first, Peter has a bit of a problem with Jesus calling Cornelius into becoming a disciple, right? Because up to this point, to Peter's understanding, this faith system, it was exclusive for Jews and for Jews alone. But as we know, like, the massive and audacious thing that Jesus said is that the way of Jesus, this belief system, this has no boundaries. This is belonging for every single type of person. And so Peter, following in the footsteps of his rabbi, he does the same thing for Cornelius. He accepts a Roman, whom he had nothing in common with, right? Like, Peter accepts someone who lives in a completely different way than he would ever understand. He accepts someone who believes in God even in a completely different way. Think about that for a second. Now, here's the beautiful part. How does Peter accept this man, this Roman named Cornelius? I love this. Peter invites him into his home to share a meal at his table. Now that's a big deal, because in the Jewish faith, this is a massive disruption. First, You never share a meal with someone who isn't a Jew, because sharing a meal in the Jewish consciousness, it meant that you are standing in favor for their life, right? And so sharing a meal with someone who isn't a Jew, this is a massive hit to Jewish tribalism. But when Cornelius is literally coming to faith in the system, into the way of Jesus, this meant that this faith system is for everyone and anyone. And so Cornelius comes to Peter's house to share a meal, and this is what we see. It says that the next day that Peter started out with all the other disciples, and they went to this place called Joppa, right? And the verse says that the following day, they get to Caesarea, and Cornelius was expecting them. And so he had called all of his friends and relatives and close to hear what Peter had to say. So sorry. And what happens is Peter goes into Cornelius's house, and it says that Cornelius, get this, Cornelius falls down in front of Peter in reverence. But then Peter gets Cornelius up and he says to stand up. And Peter says this, he says, because I'm only a man myself. Now, follow me here. That might be a little confusing, but you might be seeing the same thing that I'm seeing here. Cornelius shows up to Peter's house. Now, Cornelius, right, being someone who sees Peter as a rabbi now, as someone as reverent as Jesus, he falls at Peter's feet in honor to him. What does Peter do? Peter tells him to stand up. And Peter says, listen, we don't have anything in common. You don't look anything like me. You don't act like me. You don't come from the same places I do. I don't understand why you live your life the way you do. You don't understand why I live my life the way that I do. But he says that he is just another human being, just like Cornelius. See, this is what the belonging of Jesus does. It shows us and people like Peter and Cornelius that the best of the best aren't the only ones who have the seat at the table, right? Like, being a community of radical, audacious belonging means every single person has a seat at the table. And this is just like Jesus pulling that one time where he pulls Peter up from the water and he asks Peter why he doubts himself, right? Peter is following the way of his rabbi, Jesus, and he pulls Cornelius up to his feet and says, you are no different or better than me. I am not better than you. And so Cornelius, stop doubting yourself. He tells Cornelius that he is worthy, that he is wanted, that he is loved by God, and that Cornelius is also loved by Peter. And when I think of radical belonging, I think of this story, because I think this is what belonging should look like. That our tables should be full of people who look nothing like us. They should be full of people who believe nothing like us, who come from different backgrounds and different genders and different ethnicities, different sexual orientations, different income classes, different loves and different traumas, different ways of living, so that we can all remind one another that diversity and inclusivity in one another's human lives is literally what Jesus came here to do. Like, these rabbis would say to their disciples as they begin to follow their rabbi, they would tell them this statement. They would say that, may the dust of your life, may the dust of your rabbi cover your life. And when I think about our tables, like, my hope is that we all would be covered in the dust of those that have a seat in our table. That we would be covered in one another's stories and experiences and ways of living. And when someone at our table voices joy or peace or trauma or injustices, even if we don't understand or even agree with what is being said, that we would stop in solidarity and soak in every single word, so that we can restore one another's faith in God, and that we can restore one another's faith in themselves. Like, that is That is radical, radical belonging. We've talked about beauty. We've talked about belonging. When I see this man named Jesus and what he came to do, where I see where we come from, I'm reminded that we are here to make more and more beautiful things. But I'm even more deeply reminded that the message of Jesus, it's all about giving every single person a seat at the table. So my friends there in New City Church, may you see that your life is here for you to make more and more and more beautiful things. May you ask yourself the hard question of what is it, what beauty will I create that can change this world? May you see the creation poem not as just a poem that tells a story, but a poem that tells you about your life. May you see that the beautiful things that you can create in this world, they can create places of empathy, and equity, and inclusion, and justice. And so as you leave today, after listening to some guy in Portland who's all jacked up on meds and who's got COVID, may you see that being a part of a community, being part of a faith system, that is about finding beauty and belonging. My brothers and sisters, that's the way that I think we can change the world. So my friends out there in LA, may peace and may love be with you and with your families. May health be with you and with your families. May beauty and belonging be with you this week. Peace and love. So great seeing you all this morning.